This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Illinois 13th District Representative Nikki Baczynski. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Congresswoman Nikki Baczynski next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 530 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. On the sidelines of last week's Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, I had the opportunity to speak on agriculture issues with Illinois 13th District Representative Nikki Baczynski. As a member of the House Agriculture Committee, Baczynski said she was anxious to get back to Washington and work on ag policy, but celebrated having a global agriculture event in her district.
I love it. It's huge for Decatur, for the city of Decatur, let me say, an honor for us as a community to get to host this. I joke with friends, kind of joke, that this is the Ag Super Bowl right here in Decatur. I mean, that is the Farm Progress Show. It's incredibly, I think, important because you get to bring together the growers from our communities, actually from across the Midwest, probably from across the country, right here to Decatur. So you hear from the growers, you hear from business. You know, ADM, their North American headquarters, is right here in Decatur. I work really closely with Primient. We have phenomenal agricultural research that also happens in central and southern Illinois. It's a great opportunity for us to showcase that. My first stop today was I stopped by the University of Illinois' College of Aces tent. I'm a University of Illinois graduate. And so it's really cool to see all that's happening. You know, at U of I, I visited AI Farms. AI is touching agriculture. I visited the energy farm at the University of Illinois. They are building a future that will project what carbon looks like in our environment in 30 years and how we grow more resilient crop. So we are leading the way here in agriculture, and the Farm Progress Show is just a great opportunity to showcase that.
It is no secret that these are challenging economic times. And while many farmers don't like to experience it, it is also those challenging times that bring out the spirit of innovation that make them even better, figuring out how to produce more with less.
You're absolutely right, Jeff. These are incredibly challenging times, and I would kind of say the word uncertainty. I think that's what kind of hangs over so much of this. You know, you and I have talked about the importance of a farm bill and getting a farm bill done. We still have yet to get that fully completed. Some components of the farm bill, as you know, were addressed in the one big bill, but there are left other things out on the table that still need to be negotiated. That adds to this level of uncertainty. When you hear about input prices still being very high, the unpredictability and the uncertainty of what these tariffs are going to do to those input prices, what that's going to mean for farmers, when you talk about where corn and soybean prices are and historic lows. So there is a lot of pain right now, I think, in the farm economy. The Farm Progress Show is a great opportunity for me, at least, to hear directly from folks that are touched by this, what it means, what they want me to be advocating for when I go back to Washington. We need to create more relief. There's a lot of things I think we should be doing and need to get to.
We can touch those. I would like to edge up to something that I see. There's legislation that you debate inside the halls of Congress. There's regulation that's proposed and that there is a comment period. Mm-hmm. But there's also the court of public opinion. And there is a group within the administration, MAHA. Mm-hmm. And they have suggested that there is a deep set of agriculture that wants to use genetic engineered crops, that wants to use pesticides mm-hmm. to protect crops, that wants to use fertilizer. And they say that this is the concern.
Mm-hmm.
Where would agriculture be in your 13th district if we took away all of those tools that producers use today?
Very, very challenged if they took away all those tools. I mean, I think what MAHA, what you saw in the first report, which was deeply concerning, were a lot of inaccuracies, to say the least, things that they had to go back and correct. It wasn't science-based. We should let science lead the way in this. My concerns around MAHA and the MAHA movement and what Secretary Kennedy are doing is I don't think they're fact-based. I don't think it's based in reality of science. And so if you don't do that, you're going to hurt our growers. You're going to hurt our farm communities, our economy. And so what I'm hoping is they've been saying another report is going to be coming out. We'd heard in August. I've now heard it might be punted to the beginning of September. I just sure hope that this is more based in fact and science and not in fiction.
So there was a budget reconciliation bill, and it made some cuts to nutrition programs, and it made some cuts to health care.
Mm-hmm.
First, from the mindset of budget reconciliation, does that change your mind or attitude toward finishing a farm bill and bring it to conclusion?
Yeah, it's challenging, and I'll tell you why. I think, and you know this, Jeff, it's like $187 billion of cuts to SNAP. That's really bad. SNAP, nutrition have always been, or historically, most recently, been really negotiated in a farm bill as a part of a package. What happened in the reconciliation bill, or the big bill, is that it broke apart the Farm Bill Coalition in a lot of ways. So when you separate nutrition as they did these $187 billion of cuts to SNAP, and then you don't marry them with the other things that we really need to get to in a farm bill, which is crop insurance, which is, for example, our trade promotion programs, it's agricultural research, it's broadband investment. These are all things that are usually negotiated together within the titles of the farm bill, but what they did in the big bill was they broke some of that apart. I think the challenge in getting to now what they refer to as the skinny farm bill, which is what we need to do before the end of September when the farm bill technically expires, is how do we rebuild the trust amongst ourselves on both sides of the aisle to come together and say, let's work together to get the rest of this finished and get it across the finish line. I think there's a lot of trust that needs to be repaired in that. Some of the challenges are what happened with SNAP. That creates a lot of consternation, and a lot of folks on my side of the aisle aren't necessarily eager to come back to the table to negotiate the rest of it. I'm somebody who really believes, and I celebrate the bipartisan spirit of the House Agriculture Committee. I think we should always be talking. I think we should be at the table. That's what I've urged our ranking member, Angie Craig, to do, so that if we can get to that skinny farm bill, let's see if we can reach a deal, because that's what our farmers want. That's what our communities want. But it's not without its challenge.
Certainly there is a play for efficiency and making sure that dollars are going where they're needed. But in talking with people at Feeding America, there are more people today in need of hunger programs or hunger initiatives than there were during the COVID crisis.
I believe that. And I can tell you that's a fact here in Decatur, right where the Farm Progress Show is. The needs at the food banks are going to historic highs right now. At the same time, we're looking to be cutting back on SNAP. I also want to highlight, some of the other really wildly successful programs at the USDA, a program here in Illinois, we call it Illinois Eats, but actually it's a spinoff of the federal program at the USDA called the Local Food Purchasing Grant Program. That's been wildly successful. And why I say that is it really partners our growers. They're growing fresh fruits and vegetables, and then they sell it to the food banks. So those food banks uniquely are able to offer those fruits and vegetables that they might otherwise not be able to. It's a partnership and a win-win for the grower and for the food bank. This was really successful at the USDA. This administration just eliminated that complete program. So when I talk to folks here in Macon County, for example, they're looking at how can they locally raise the money to keep that program going. because they've lost their federal partner. This is happening in a lot of different places within the USDA. And so when we talk about uncertainty, yes, it is the Farm Bill, but it is also, I think, the way this administration is looking at deep cuts to staff and, or to staff and personnel at the USDA, cuts to really important grant programs like the local food purchasing program is just one of them. You know, there's talk right now that the USDA might try to move a lot of their services out of Washington and into the states, which by in and of itself, you know, moving services closer to the farmer is like not a bad idea, but the devil's in the details here. What I don't want is to see those kind of changes negatively impact our growers and create more of a barrier for them to getting access to things like technical assistance.
So if Chairman Thompson wanted to offer an olive branch to try to bring the committee back together in a spirit to accomplish that skinny farm bill, what would be a good olive branch?
I think it's going to need to be a demonstration that there is some revenue for some of the programs that we really care about in our agricultural communities. I'm talking about agricultural research. Are we really meaningfully addressing that? I want to see our trade promotion programs fully funded, if not doubled. That was a bipartisan, amendment that actually had a lot of support, is doubling our trade promotion programs. Young and beginning farmers is something I've also been really working hard on. How do we create, and we have created at the USDA, a low-interest loan program for young people to acquire land through that low-interest loan program. These all things take resources, and so it's demonstrating an effort to address those. The second thing I want to mention is something that I really brought up during the markup of the Farm Bill last Congress. I don't want to see a geographic winners and losers Farm Bill as is typically the case. And what I mean by that is I want to see our Midwestern growers get a fair shake in this Farm Bill. So when cotton and peanut and rice, after the one big bill, end up with prices per acre at about $240 to $270, and then you look at soybean and corn and it's something like a measly $30-some dollars, we need to see more parity. I know it's not apples to apples, but when I say I don't want to see a regional farm bill, that's what was coming out of that markup last Congress. I'd like to see more equity, more parity, fairness for our Midwestern farmers. That would also show a commitment from Chairman Thompson that he's serious about a farm bill.
I have talked to members on both sides of the aisle that really now question the cuts that came to Medicaid. And not so much just individuals not having health care, but for the life of rural hospitals and health care facilities and those who care for the aged of our population, that these cuts may have consequences much beyond budget savings, and they'd like to see some money come back there.
Yeah, and I would just say I'm very concerned about that as well. I've signed on to legislation to repeal those parts of the one big bill that would negatively impact our rural communities, specifically through these deep cuts to Medicaid. We know in the state of Illinois at least 11 hospitals are on the watch list for potential closure. A lot of those hospitals are within our rural communities. Our rural communities rely on Medicaid dollars to keep their doors open. I represent about 46 different community health centers throughout central and southern Illinois, and there's a range between 30% to all the way up to 85% of Medicaid dollars is what keeps these places open. And we face in our rural communities some unique challenges to health care. Just off the bat, we don't have the specialty care that a lot of the more urban areas do. When we talk about mental health, at the last Farm Progress show, I know we were talking about mental health challenges with farmers, and that actually touches our agricultural community. These cuts to Medicaid are going to make access to behavioral health that much more challenging for our rural communities, and you're going to, at the very worst, you're going to see some of these doors close on some of these hospitals. And not to make this so overly political, but just to say, Jeff, you know, why they made these cuts, $800 billion of cuts to Medicaid was to prioritize tax cuts for people that, quite frankly, don't need it. The richest people in this country, on the backs of our rural communities, these cuts were made. And I just think that this is going to be something that's going to be a lot of pain for quite a while, until some leadership changes in Washington.
Soybean farmers are facing a situation that export sales are non-existent to China. And for corn farmers, the price of corn is the same as it was 1974, and input prices have gone up. Now, in the budget reconciliation, there was some improvement in the reference price, and it was an effect for the 25 crop. That's a plus. But those checks aren't written until the fall.
Right.
And we are hearing from a number of producers that say they may not make it till next fall. Now, in Trump 1.0, there was market facilitation payments from the Commodity Credit Corporation that went out. But the CCC is low on funds.
Yep.
Do you see a situation where rural representatives will come to the table and say, we need to do something in farm country?
Yes, absolutely. I've heard about that today, actually, from a number of growers. I just had an agricultural advisory council where it came up there, too, is maybe some of the revenue that's being generated from these tariffs could be siphoned off and put into the CCC to help, you know, expedite payments if that's something that is needed. It's looking like something that very likely could. You know, the other thing is moving up payments earlier rather than waiting for the next year. And so I think being creative is something that we might need to be in order to help support these farmers. I mean, I want to say, going back to the first Trump administration, they utilized about $28 billion out of the CCC. And that was a trade war, I would say, that Trump initiated that was nowhere near the scale of what we're talking about today. That had a price tag of $28 billion of taxpayer-funded dollars that needed to shore up our ag economy. At that same time, you saw a 20% increase in bankruptcies with family farms in that first Trump administration. Again, this was just with a fraction of what he was doing, you know, what he's doing now, which what he did then, a lot less than a lot more now as it relates to renegotiating these trade agreements and what that trickle-down effect is going to be.
I've also spoken with other members of the minority mm-hmm. who have said they were concerned about approving new policy because there was budget reconciliation that took money away from programs. Mm-hmm. There was a rescission package that took money away from approved programs, and that there may be more rescission packages. So why would we want to approve new policy when it's only going to be cut? In the environment, reconciliation, rescission already cuts to Medicare and nutrition, and now agriculture comes to the table and say, we need help.
Yeah.
This is a challenge.
It is a challenge, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, building trust. How do we rebuild trust? Those rescission packages were very harmful as it relates to the trust that we have on both sides of the aisle and working together. Because I think the comment that you're making, and something that I've heard from other colleagues, is that if we come to a deal, let's say we come to a deal with Chairman Thompson on a skinny farm bill, how do we know that tomorrow there's not an edict that comes down from the Trump administration that tells them you're going to have to rescind all those offers that you just had a handshake on the day before? And that is the big issue. How do we rebuild that trust so we can sit across the table from each other to do what's right for our farmers? I do worry about, just at home, being in the community and being with constituents, they are so sick and tired of this broken system. They are so sick and tired of it. What I don't want to do is contribute to it. I want to be a part of helping to find the solutions. For me, that means working with some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle when we can find the places. Biofuels, great example of something, was just with Congressman Mike Boston. We were talking about, we're both on board for year-round E15. I mean, this is like a common sense thing that would support our growers. Those are the things that I'm going to continue to try to find the places where we can work together. And then there are things that we're not going to agree on. I'm never going to agree on the $187 billion of cuts to SNAP or the $800 billion of cuts to Medicaid, because I know it's going to hurt the people I represent. But we can agree to disagree, and we can find places, I think, still strive to find the places where we do.
The budget reconciliation bill did include dollars for 45Z. But I'm using words from Ken Hartman, one of your growers in Illinois, who said, we need demand. Well, you happen to be co-chair of the Biofuels Caucus. How much further should Washington go toward biofuels to save money for consumers and provide markets for farmers?
It's so important that we do that, and I think there's a number of things. Some of it is, quite frankly, low-hanging fruit that I think the administration could do. I go back to year-round E15. If we're going to get a budget deal done, which I hope we do at the end of September, we should put a year-round E15 in that budget deal and just make it happen. Let's just do it. The other things I would say, you know, yes, there was some encouraging 45Z language in the big bill, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in that, and we could do provide more certainty in that market. Some of the things I think when we have a strong RFS, renewable fuel standard, we have good RVO, but the thing that the administration just recently did is related to our small refineries. They wiped out, there were 189 different petitions. They granted and cleared that backlog. That's going to impact the RVO and what our growers are growing for if we're going to allow that whole backlog to be put on the books. It's not going to leave a lot of room for what we're growing today. So I think those are the kind of common sense things that we could create some more clarity, more transparency in the biofuel space that'll allow this economy to really take off. That benefits, again, yes, our growers, it reduces carbon emissions, which I care about, and then it creates more diversity of energy in our markets, which is so important when we're looking at energy prices going up.
The phrase is darned if you do and darned if you don't. Mm-hmm. Darned if you don't, that the global trading partners are not treating us fairly. Darned if you do, if you give them the stiff arm and face retaliation. How should Washington deal with its trading partners now?
Look, I think that you can use tariffs strategically with industries that you are looking to try to bring onshore. You know, chips is a great example. And our semi-autoconductors, we want to be able to compete with China. We need to jumpstart and keep investing in that industry to remain competitive with China. But when you take this blanket all approach to everything and put a blanket tariff on everything, when you look at what happened in India or Japan, a lot of these trade agreements, they're not actually put to paper, which is unbelievable. It's just like some verbal commitment and a handshake. And then now then you hear the Japanese are saying, well, we didn't agree to that. It's chaos. So I think the way you approach our trading partners is with clarity, with certainty, put it to paper, figure out where we want to find the strategic advantage, but realize that we are a global economy and our growers rely on markets to sell our goods. And when you hear, as I think you referenced, China has not purchased any soybeans in the United States to date. As of usual in a year, it's about 10% they would have purchased of our soybeans. They've purchased zero. They have purchased them other places, though, like Brazil. We are losing market share with this trade policy. We have to change it.
Congresswoman, thank you for taking time during a busy Farm Progress show and all your constituents to talk to us here on Open Mic.
Sure.
It is Open Mic. You're the first time with us, and the guest always gets the last word.
Well, I just want to say thanks, Jeff. I love being out at the Farm Progress show. It's always great to talk farm with you, Farm Bill with you. So thanks.
Our thanks to Illinois 13th District Representative Nikki Budzinski, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.